This is Business Beat. Welcome. Here each week, KBIA takes a look at the business and economic issues facing Mid-Missouri. I'm Christopher Husted. Remember in the film Night of the Living Dead when the protagonist, Barbara, is running through the grassy hills to the farmhouse to escape her lumbering zombie of a brother? Well, while recently reporting for Harvest Public Media, I spent time on farmland that looked eerily similar. Farmers who plant corn or soybeans in this land know they are taking a chance, but not because they're worried about zombies trampling their fields. This so-called marginal land is susceptible to erosion and is rarely productive, but there are crops that can thrive consistently on this high-risk land, and some farmers are just beginning to discover the market potential.
This is Indian grass here. You see it starting to flower.
I'm walking around the parched rolling hills of western Missouri with Wayne Vassar. After this summer's drought, you might expect to see a desolate scene, yet hip-high native grass sways around us like seaweed in the ocean. Vassar is showing me some of the native plants he grows for biofuel.
So if someone had owned this land and wanted to plant corn or soy on it, what would happen?
Well, they've had corn and soy on it in the past, and what's happened is when you have this kind of slopes, it erodes pretty rapidly, and you lose a lot of your fertility as the topsoil goes down the hill.
Farmland experts call the ground we're standing on marginal land. Here, the hills make it difficult for the soil to hold on to nutrients. Along the rivers and other floodplains, frequent flooding can deprive plants the oxygen they need. It all adds up to an estimated 116 million acres in the central U.S. Land like this might only produce a profitable harvest with traditional crops once or twice every 5 years. And that's quite a financial risk for farmers.
How do you then avoid the risk factor and make sure that such soils provide an economic return for the landowners consistently? And that's where some of these biomass feedstock crops come in.
That's Shibu Joes. He's the director of agroforestry at the University of Missouri. And he says native grasses, or biomass, like the grasses Wayne Vassar is growing, have evolved naturally to survive in flood and drought conditions. They are cheap and require low maintenance. I'm talking about watering maybe once a season. The problem is the market for the native grasses, primarily for use in biofuel, isn't nearly as strong as it is for the occasional productive harvest of corn or soybeans. Trying to kickstart this market model is the Federal Biomass Crop Assistance Program, in which the U.S. Department of Agriculture subsidizes landowners who are willing to grow biomass for biofuel. Vassar is a part of that program, which was initiated by the 2008 Farm Bill. Back at the farm office, Vassar tells me that Show Me Energy Co-op, a biorefinery just down the road, buys his biomass as well as from a few hundred other growers, too. The co-op then converts it into pellets, which are then sold to coal plants for burning in stoves and even for cattle feed.
Right now, it's very lucrative. $100 a ton was half that, and if they have a really good stands of biomass, they can produce 3 or 4 tons per acre, so that's pretty nice little cash return per acre.
Ideally, the goal is to convert the biomass to liquid biofuel, like ethanol, for interested industries such as commercial airlines and the military. But Joe says the refineries that can actually do that are sparsely scattered around the U.S., which makes it too expensive for many would-be growers to transport their harvest.
Transportation is a major bottleneck when we talk about a bio-based economy. The reason being, you are trying to, you know, to transport a low-energy feedstock. You cannot transport that very far. If you do that, the economics behind it will disappear in a hurry.
In the meantime, Joes says that even using a fraction of the marginal land available could help close the gap on a federal mandate for 21 billion gallons of non-corn starch biofuel in the nation's supply by 2022.
We estimate that based on the current level of productivity, if you convert 10% of the marginal land along the Mississippi River, we can produce up to 6 to 8 billion gallons of advanced biofuels from this corridor alone. And that would be about a third of the advanced biofuel target that we have as a country.
Back at the farm, Vassar drives me to a thicket of grass that looks like the bucolic backdrop of a family Easter portrait.
And even with this drought-laden, waterless summer, this grass looks pretty healthy.
It looks pretty good. Yeah, it's good. It's almost waist high, and it's had a cutting of hay taken off of it. And not much moisture this year.
Vassar says interest in growing biomass is building among landowners, especially in light of the drought. Indeed, the USDA's biomass program has a waiting list of farmers ready to jump on board. In Kingsville, Missouri, I'm Christopher Husted for Harvest Public Media. Financial planners have often suggested that people are more likely to retire when there's an upswing in the market. To see if this is truly the case, MU Professor of Personal Finance Planning Ray Yao pored over retirement data from a University of Michigan study. KBIA's Haroom Helmi sat down with Yao to learn more.
What did you set out to find with your study?
By looking at the raw data without controlling for any other variables, we looked at the market sequence and the probability to retire. During the first period of market upswing, let's say, for example, from 1993 to 1994, the probability to retire increased from 3.6 to 5%. Retirement probability increased from 9.9% in 2003 to 14.2% in 2006.
And so this kind of goes along with that theory of projection bias?
Right. Projection bias is a bias that people have to naively extrapolate a current trend into the future. So if people see that market is doing extremely well in recent years, they will think, oh, yeah, you know, it cannot go down. Well, it'll go up every year from now on, which is not true because we know markets go through cycles, ups and downs. And people who are affected by the projection bias will tend to make a decision that is not optimal for them.
When should people retire then? You know, is there like a specific good time for it?
Right. I'm not here to scare people. But I would like people to do a careful estimation and compare their retirement resources and their retirement needs and really decide, is retirement at this time a good one for me? Am I retiring because everybody else is retiring or because my spouse is retiring or because I feel the market is doing so good, you know, I have enough money, I can retire? Okay, if that's the case, I mean, I'm not saying people should not retire at the peak of the market. I mean, if the situation is good, they can. But most people cannot afford to do that.
And that will do it for Business Beat this week. You can check out these stories, plus a video dispatch from the spooky biomass fields at kbia.org. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.